Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
Gabriel Garcia Marquez's novel, 100 Years of Solitude, chronicles the life of this little Mexican town called Macondo and all the families who live in that town. At one point in their history, this plague of insomnia strikes the little town. All the residents go weeks and then months without any sleep, and they begin to lose vital faculties. The first thing to go is their memory. Even the simplest and most common household goods appear to them to be foreign, unfamiliar, forgotten. Aureliano is a silversmith in the town, and he's working in his shop one day when he realizes that he can't remember the name for the little anvil that he uses in his work every day. And so he asks his father, Jose. His father tells him, and Aureliano decides to write the name on a piece of paper, and he pastes it to the base of this small anvil. He pastes the word steak, so he'll remember to call it a steak. A few days later, he discovers that he has trouble remembering almost every object in his workroom, and so he marks all of them with their respective names so that he can just read the inscription on it in order to identify them. Well, Jose, the father, he thinks it's a great idea, and so he puts it into practice with everything in the whole house, and later it kind of imposes it on the whole village. With an inked brush, he just marks down everything with its name. Table, chair, bed, pan, wall. And then he goes out to the stables and he starts putting names on the animals and the plants. Cow, horse, pig, banana. Well, soon he realizes that the day is probably coming when people will be able to recognize these items by their name, but they won't remember what to use them for. And so he starts becoming more explicit. Like he puts a sign on the neck of the cow that says, "This is the cow. She must be milked every day in order to produce milk. And the cow's milk must be boiled in order to be mixed with coffee to make coffee and milk." And at the beginning of the road that leads into their town, so as not to forget the name of the town, they put up a sign that says, "Macondo." And they put another much larger sign in the middle of the main street for everyone to see every day. And the sign says, "God exists." The first time I heard that story, I kind of laughed. That's weird. But the story haunted me. And the second time I read it, I realized, and that's my story too. And it's really not a bad plan. Like right above my bed on a big sign, I should write the words, "God exists." Because the truth is, it seems that I wake up most mornings kind of an unbeliever. It's like somehow during the night, I slip into this forgetfulness. And by the time I wake up, all the things I've learned about God, all the ways that God has proven himself to me, the ways that I've learned to trust him, man, they can just all seem a million miles away. And perhaps you're like me. Maybe you realize that you've forgotten about God. Or maybe it seems like you forget about God a little bit every single day. That story of the forgetful Mexican town, it reminded me of me, my story, and it also reminded me of Dory. If you've seen Finding Nemo or Finding Dory, you know that Dory is this cute little blue fish that has no short-term memory. She never seems to know where she is or where she's going. She always feels lost, like there's something missing, and she's always wondering what it is. There's this one moment in the original movie, Finding Nemo, where she looks at Marlin, and Marlin's kind of a father figure, and she looks at him kind of strangely, and she says, "When I see you, I see home." But she doesn't know why. She doesn't know why she has that feeling. She doesn't realize, because of her memory loss, that she has wandered away from home. But that's what we learn in the second movie, Finding Dory, that what she's missing is home. She's missing the love of home. And we learn in Finding Dory that back at home, her parents are missing her. They can't stand living without her. Their hearts are broken. And so every single day since she's left, they've been leaving clues, just hoping that maybe Dory will see them and maybe she'll follow them and maybe they'll lead her back to them, to home. The problem is that Dory doesn't know she's lost. And she doesn't look for the clues because she has no idea that her parents are looking for her. She doesn't know that there is a home to go to. But finally, one day, she has this, like, epiphany, and she realizes what it is that she's been missing the whole time. She's missing her parents. She's missing their love. She's missing home. And so finally, she goes off searching. Finally, she starts looking for clues. Finally, she understands what the clues are. And total spoiler alert, sorry, the clues lead her home. So every year we do this series on movies, and it's because movies can contain so much truth or illustrate so much truth about God and about life. And so, like, in the next few weeks, we're going to be looking at Suicide Squad and Captain America, and then on our Christmas Eve weekend, we're doing Elf. We were going to do the Fast and the Furious series of movies, but we realized that, like, we would need, like, a year to do that. It was going to be, like, you know, first week, Fast and the Furious, second week, Fast and the Furious, more Fast, and the third week, more Furious, or whatever. But no, we're doing Suicide Squad, Captain America, Elf, if you want to watch those in advance. But this week, Finding Dory, and when I took my family to see Finding Dory, I watched it, and I thought, that's it. That's my story. That's your story. That's the story that we read about in the Bible from cover to cover. The Bible tells us this story that God is our Father, our loving Father, and that each and every single one of us has wandered away from Him. We've all left home. We may know we did that, like maybe it was a very intentional, deliberate choice. We turned our back on God and walked away. Or maybe we don't even realize what we've done. We don't even realize we wandered away from God. Or, and this is very likely, it may be that you wander away from God a little bit every single day. You kind of go back home and you wander away again. And when we're apart from God, when there's this space between us, it leaves us feeling lost. Like there's something that's missing, and we may not know what it is or why we feel this way. We wonder, like, what is it that I'm missing? Why do I feel like this? And we learn in the Bible that it's not just us who's missing something, because God is missing us. And, like, He's heartbroken over the fact that He is doing life outside of relationship with us. He can't stand it. And so what God does is He leaves us clues. And God's hope is that you'll see the clues, recognize that they're clues, and that you'll follow them to Him. I want to show you a place where we kind of catch this idea. If you have a Bible, turn to the book of Isaiah, chapter 65, or if maybe you have a Bible app on your phone, or if you have the Verve app, there's a Bible embedded in the free Verve app. If you don't have a Bible, that's totally fine. We're going to put all the verses on the screen for you to read up there. If you don't own a Bible, we give them out for free at the Velcro Bar, which is our connecting place. So check out, this is God speaking. It's in a book called Isaiah, chapter 65, starting in verse 1. And here's what God says. I revealed myself to those who did not ask for me. I was found by those who did not seek me. To a nation that did not call on my name, I said, here am I, here am I. All day long, I have held out my hands. Let's read that one more time. God says, I revealed myself to those who did not ask for me. I was found by those who did not seek me. To a nation that did not call on my name, I said, here am I, here am I. All day long, I have held out my hand. When you hear that, what picture does it give you of God? I don't know, the picture I get, it sounds like a little kid who's playing hide and seek, who's hiding, but really wants to be found. Were you ever that kid? Did you ever, when you were young, play hide and seek and you were hiding and maybe you got scared or maybe you had to go to the bathroom really bad or maybe you just wanted to be reunited with your friends and you got tired of hiding and so you maybe like you kind of kicked some leaves behind the tree hoping the person would hear or you kind of like stuck your elbow out hoping. That's how God sounds here, right? He's like, I'm hiding, but I really want to be found. And that's an accurate picture. That's God. He wants to be found. Now, he's given us free will. So it's our choice. He will never force himself on you. But he loves you. He loves you no matter who you are, no matter what you've done, no matter where you've been. He loves you, and he wants to be found. And so what God does is he leaves clues. He leaves these clues all around, and they're designed to lead us to him. The only question, like with Dory, is whether we'll see those clues, and even more, whether we'll recognize that they are clues. So like with Dory, a little more spoiler alert, the clues are a path of shells that she's supposed to follow to lead her home to her parents and their love. Problem, Dory sees shells all around every day. So it's really easy to not notice these shells and what they're designed to do. And so, like Dory, the question is, will we see the clues? Will we recognize them as clues? And will we let them lead us home? So, you might be wondering, what clues might God be leaving to lead us to him? Maybe we don't recognize them, but what might they be? Let's kind of explore that. Let's talk about some of the clues. So, like, one of the clues that God leaves us to lead us to him is nature. Nature. I will admit, I'm not, like, a very nature guy. Like, I don't like camping. Like, hotel's good with me. I'm like, I can go to the beach for an hour or two, and then I'm like, I'm done. Like, I'm not a nature guy. But even I have those wow kind of moments when you see something in nature, and it kind of takes your breath away, you know, and you just have this thought, there's got to be something behind this. There must be. Does that ever happen to you? Like, maybe, have you ever watched a sunrise or a sunset or felt a baby kick inside the belly of her mother or seen a birth or stared at a full moon? Have you ever gone up to the mountains? Or maybe you walked along the beach and you just gazed out at the vastness of the ocean. Have you ever stood at the edge of the Grand Canyon and looked down into its just enormity? Or watched Niagara Falls? Have you ever been snorkeling or scuba diving and gotten to witness the living seas? Or maybe you just stood somewhere and stared at a bird in flight. Or you saw something more unusual, spectacular, like maybe an eclipse or the northern lights. And when you do, there's something inside of you that just knows. You know. Here's how the Bible says it in Psalm 19. The Bible says, "The heavens proclaim the glory of God. The skies display his craftsmanship. Day after day, they continue to speak. Night after night, they make him known. They speak without a sound or word. Their voice is never heard. Yet their message has gone throughout the earth and their words to all the world." What that's saying is that nature communicates without words. But if we're watching, we get the message, right? We realize there's got to be something. There must be someone behind this. There's a guy named Paul Scowen. He's an astronomer at Arizona State University. And he told the Washington Post magazine, he said, "My experience is that the more I learn about the universe, the more I believe there has to be a creator just because it's so complex. Another guy, Paul Davies, is a physicist. He's not a Christian, yet even he admits there is powerful evidence that there is something going on behind it all. The impression of design is overwhelming. It's like the universe is holding up a big sign for us that says, God exists. Another clue that God leaves us to lead us to Him is art. Like, have you ever been listening to a song, or maybe you saw a painting? I'm not talking about your favorite painting, the dogs playing poker. Okay, I'm talking about like you were at like an art museum and you looked at this painting, or maybe you watched a movie, or you read a book when something stirred inside of you. Like you couldn't even quite explain what was happening inside of you, but something about that art, maybe there was like this burst of longing inside of you, or maybe there was this sense of connection or this fulfillment that was almost impossible for you to explain what was happening inside of you or why it was happening. The great author Virginia Woolf called those moments, she called them moments of being. Moments of being. And here's what she said about it. Maybe this will connect with you. She said that this is the strongest pleasure known to me. It is the rapture I get. It is a constant idea of mine that behind the cotton wall is hidden a pattern that we, I mean all human beings, are connected with this. That the whole world is a work of art. That we are parts of the work of art. Maybe that feeling we get from art is meant to lead us to the original artist. Another clue that God leaves us to lead us to Him is that longing we have inside of us for more. I think if we're honest, we would all admit that down inside of us, when we really take a look, there's this. It's almost like there's a hole inside of us, like something is missing, and we don't know what it is, but we know it needs to be filled, and so we try to stuff some success in there, or maybe we take drugs or alcohol to try to fill that hole, or just to forget that it's there, or maybe it's a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a husband or a wife, or we have a baby, because we're sure that must be what we're missing. If I had that, I'd feel full. Or we try to get more educated, or we play video games, or read romance novels, or we eat excessively, or we take the sex route. We try all these things, but we discover that none of those things are what we're missing. None of those things solve the problem. None of those things fill this hole. And hopefully at some point we have this epiphany, we realize that what we are longing for is something beyond this world, something better than anything this world has to offer us. And when you have that epiphany, doesn't that make you wonder? There's a author, philosopher, brilliant guy named C.S. Lewis. And C.S. Lewis wrote about how it would not make sense for us to long for something that doesn't exist. Wouldn't make any sense. Can you picture being physically hungry, but there being no such thing as food? That wouldn't make any sense. Now, just because you're hungry doesn't necessarily mean you have food, or even that you can get food, but it would certainly seem to indicate that such a thing as food exists. And in the same way, Lewis thought, the fact that our souls are hungry, that we long for something we can't find in this life, that we recognize this hole inside of us and want something to fill the emptiness, tells us that there is something beyond this life, something beyond this world. Now, just because our souls are hungry doesn't mean that we have what it takes to fill it or even that we can get it, but it would at least seem to indicate that something must exist. That there has to be something more, something better, something beyond. And that emptiness that we sense inside of us, if we're honest, that's a clue from God. He wants you to let that lead you to Him. This is the way the Bible says it in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 11. It says, God has set eternity in our hearts. We long for something beyond. It's like God put this sign inside of your soul. God exists. Which leads right to another clue that God leaves us to lead us to Him, which are the testimonies of changed lives. So there are a whole lot of people who claim that they have had that emptiness filled, that hunger satisfied, and that it has truly changed their lives. And it's really hard to ignore that. When you meet people like that, it's just hard to deny. Like there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people who were enslaved by addictions to all kinds of things, drugs, alcohol, gambling, pornography. But when they found God and moved into relationship with Him, they claimed to be delivered from the overwhelming urge of their desire. And the proof is that they were actually able to beat their disease. How do you ignore that? For other people, they may have been set free from uncontrollable depression or low self-worth or guilt or shame or racism. It's like, how do you ignore that? For others, maybe it's not quite so dramatic, but still they've seen positive transformation happen in their lives. Maybe they're more patient or less stressed out or more gentle, or they're better husbands and fathers or more loving or more sacrificial. All kinds of things. It's kind of like the 400-pound guy you see at McDonald's who's wearing a t-shirt that says, I beat anorexia. It's hard to argue with that, right? It's like, okay. And it's tough to ignore changed lives. They're a clue. Another clue God leaves us to lead us to Him is the Bible. So my personal search, some of you know this, a lot of you don't. My personal search for God began at the age of 20. I'd never gone to church in my life, didn't know the first thing about Jesus, and I picked up a Bible, and I started to read it. And as I read it, it led me straight to Jesus, straight to this God who loved me and who was inviting me into a real life-giving relationship with Him. And so I read it and I knew where it was leading me. The question I had was, yeah, but is it true? Like, who cares if it sounds good, if it's not true? And maybe you need to start reading the Bible for the first time and see where it leads you. And you'll find that it leads you straight to Jesus and to this God who loves you, wants a relationship with you. Or perhaps you've read the Bible, you know that, you know the story, but you don't know if it's true. And if that's the case, then you need to do what I did. You need to do investigative research. I spent months and months doing that. That's how I became a Christian. And this is one of the things that's really unique about Christianity. Like, you will not be able to find in any other of the world's religions because none of them are based on historical events. Like, if you study the other world religions, what they do is they're basically like a philosophy that this person has laid out. It's like, here's what I believe that you should think about God and how you should live your life. And then you decide, do you want to put your faith in that? Do you want to live that way and believe those things? That's not Christianity at all. Christianity begs to be investigated. Like the other world religions, if you said, well, I want to find out if it's true. You can't. How do you find out if it's true? It's a person's philosophy. It's not true or not true. But with Christianity says, don't believe this unless you can prove it. And you can prove it because Christianity stakes its claims on historical events that either happened or didn't happen. And so you can investigate and find out. And you will find God if you do it. And so maybe some of you, that's your next step, is to do some investigation. We could help with that. Now, some of you are not the investigative type. You're like, nah, that's not me. I'm not going to do that. I don't even like Law and Order. That's not me. Well, there's something else that you can do, because another clue that God leaves us to lead us to Him is the Christian life and Christian community. People have noted, it's interesting to me, that learning and understanding Christianity is a lot like learning and internalizing a language. You can learn a language by opening a book and sitting by yourself and doing some research and some studying, but the best way to learn a language is by moving to a country that speaks it, right? You surround yourself with people who are living this language, and it's just much easier to pick it up. And so for some of you, maybe a part of this search will require becoming involved in Christian community. And so for you, it might mean maybe you're someone who doesn't typically go to church, but maybe you decide, you know what? I'm going to come for, like, I'll be here every week for a few, maybe from now to Easter, like a few months, and I'll just kind of make that part of my search. Or getting into a Verve group. So Verve groups are like 6 to 16 people. Some of them are all guys, some are all girls, some are mixed. They meet once a week. Some meet in Starbucks, some meet here, some meet in living rooms. And in that group, you do life together. You laugh together a lot, you support each other, you learn together, you grow together, and we have a new slate of groups starting in February. Groups run for like a semester, which is about 3 or 4 months, and I realize that some of you might say, why would I do that? Like, I'm checking this out, but I don't know if I believe in any of this stuff, so why would I commit to getting into a group? That's why you would commit to getting into a group, because it's part of the search. It's part of the journey. And here's what will happen. If you surround yourself with Christians for a while, you're going to find that they are not perfect. Okay, so don't be looking for that. Like, sometimes we'll have a sign here, you'll see it says, no perfect people allowed. They're not perfect, but you should see a difference. You will. You're going to find that they have a different way that they do life and relate to other people and handle things, and you'll be attracted to it. And you'll start feeling some things. Like, if you show up here as we stand and sing songs, as we worship, you may not quite understand it, but you'll be drawn by it. And you might just have this feeling, this is what I was created to do. I think this is what I was created to do. As you participate in a group and people are vulnerable and they share life together and they support each other, it might make you a little bit nervous because that might be new to you. But at the same time, you'll have this feeling, I think I was made for this. And as you come and participate and get to know people, there are going to be some things that happen. Like, people pray and something happens, and you're going to wonder, like I can't quite explain it, but I wonder if maybe that really is God. Like he seems to be active in these people's lives. And you'll suspect, I think it is. And if you start to read the Bible and start to put some of its principles into practice, you're going to see that, like, there's something to this. And what it is a clue leading you to God. So that there are clues all around us, but it takes some openness. It takes some commitment to actually see them. You've got to be willing to look. You've got to be willing to search. And one thing I'll encourage you with is that it tends to be more enjoyable, and I would say usually more effective, if you search with other people. So like, this is one of the fun things. If you've seen Finding Dory, how many of you have seen Finding Dory? Oh yeah, a ton of you. Dory's got her old friends Marlin and Nemo to help her look for her parents, and then along the way she meets new friends who help her search. There's an octopus named Hank, and a nearsighted whale shark named Destiny, and a beluga whale named Bailey. And Dory has these friends with her, and they just make the whole thing more enjoyable. It tends to be more enjoyable and usually more effective when we search with other people to do the journey together. And that's why we started this church. Like, we didn't start this church with this dream of shoving things down people's throats of that they don't believe, but we're going to force it on you. Like, we don't want to do that here. We don't do that here. The idea of starting this church, when we started in my living room 6-7 years ago, it was like, man, let's get friends, like new friends together, and let's search for God together. There might be friends who don't know the first thing about God, and so they're just like kind of, And there might be some friends who know a lot about God, but are not satisfied. It's like, I want more of God. I want to know Him better. I want to experience more of His love. I am not done searching. And so we started this church to be a search party. That's what Verve is. Verve is a search party. Have you guys ever heard the comedian, the now late comedian, Mitch Hedberg? He asked this question. He says, you know how sometimes you'll go to a restaurant and it's busy, and so they're taking names and they tell you how long your wait's going to be, and you wait for your name to be called. And so every once in a while they'll call it a name. They'll be like, Dufresne, party of two. Dufresne, party of two. And if no one answers, they'll call the name again. They'll say, Dufresne, party of two. And then if no one answers, they'll just go on to the next name on the list. Bush, party of three. Bush, party of three. But what happened to the Dufresnes? Like, no one seems to care. Who can eat at a time like this? There are people who are missing. The Dufresnes are in someone's trunk right now. Their mouths are covered with duct tape. They're hungry. That's a triple whammy. Well, like, they need help. Bush, search party of three. Someone needs to, you can't eat until you find the Dufresnes. Then you can eat. That's what we are at Verve. We are a search party. We're a search party. That's what we do. It's like, together we're searching for God. We want more of Him. And some of you might be like, I don't even know if I believe in God. Search with us. Some of you might be like, I've gone to church every single Sunday of my life. Here's my prayer for me, and I'll pray it for you. I don't ever want to be content. Like the day I'm like, okay, I got God cornered. I figured Him out. I got Him. Oh, man, that's a bad day. And so, like, every day it's like, I want to know God more. I want to experience His love more. I want, like, every day to be in an actual relationship with Him. I believe in Him. He's up there. He does stuff. No, I'm in a relationship with Him. Like, I'm in a relationship with my wife or my kids. Like, every day we're interacting. We're doing life together. And I'm not where I need to be yet, so I need to search. We need to search. And every day the truth is, we forget about Him. And we start to lose our memory. And so it's like, I got to search again. And so we are a search party. And what we hope is that other people will join us in seeking God. It's kind of like our church is, we're searching for people who want to search for God. And we're saying, join us, let's become friends. And together, let's search for God. And so the question I have for you, and it's a question I have for you whether this is your first time here or if you've come every single Sunday since like the first one 6 years ago, is, are you willing to search? I mean it. Are you willing to search? And if you say, I come every Sunday, that's not what I'm asking. Are you willing to search? Now, I need to be honest with you. If you say yes, well, it takes some commitment to search. Okay, this is not just something you go, yeah, okay, I'm in. But, like, it takes some commitment to search. Because if you start searching for God, you will experience difficulties. If you decide, I'm going home. The love of God is at home. I'm going home. There will be difficulty. It's like in the movie. So Dory makes this, she has this epiphany. She makes this decision. I'm going home. I want to find my parents. She faces all kinds of difficulties and opposition all along the way. Like, she has to fight to get where she needs to go. And if you decide to do this, you will face some opposition. There might be external opposition. Like, you might have some friends or some family who say, why all of a sudden do you feel like you need to get religion? Come on. Or maybe you've been going to church, but you get serious about this, and they say, oh, now you're going to become like this Jesus freak kind of person. You're like, you don't need to take it overboard. I know you go to church, but that, you might face some external opposition. You will also face some internal opposition. Like, there's going to be so much to distract you. Like, even if you decide, okay, I'm going to do this, there's going to be some reason to not come back to church next week. Right? There's going to be something else to do. There's going to be some reason not to read the Bible, not to get into a group. Right? There's going to be all kinds of things to distract you from the most important thing in your life. And there might be doubts and fears that you experience, especially if you're new to this. You might wonder, what if I do this? Like, what if I commit to this? What if I search and it's not true? Like, what if I make this journey and there's nothing there? Well, you know what? If you search, like, let's say you came here like just about every Sunday between now and Easter, and you get into a group when they start in February, and you show up for that each week for an hour, and you start reading the Bible, and maybe even do a little bit of investigative research of the evidence, And you get to the end of that journey and realize you didn't discover anything. What did you lose? Really, what did you lose? You lost a little bit of time, maybe a couple hours a week. In the big scheme of things, that's not a big deal. What did you lose? But if you do this journey and you really search, maybe for the first time for God or for maybe more of God, and you discover a God who loves you and forgives you and wants to be with you every single moment and wants to strengthen you and guide you and give you joy and peace even when you're facing the worst of circumstances, wouldn't that be worth it? Wouldn't that be worth it? And so really, you look at it and you just start to realize, man, I have virtually nothing to lose and I have everything to gain. So, search. Start. And listen to this promise that God gives you. This is good. God says this in the book of Jeremiah, chapter 29, verse 13. He says, "You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you." Maybe some of you say, you know what? I've gone to church before. I'm a pastor. I come here every week, but I don't know that I'm getting that emptiness filled. Are you seeking with all your heart? Because that's the promise. When you say there's nothing more important, I'm going to search with all my heart, that's when you find God. Are you willing to search? Are you willing to look at the clues in a different way and start to follow them wherever they lead? I hope so, because it will be worth it. And if you really seek God with all your heart, you will find him. And you'll be home. You'll be home. I want to ask you a few questions, and I'm going to give you a minute to pray. It might help if you want. I'd encourage you, maybe close your eyes just so you can really focus. Okay, I'm going to ask you a couple questions. Let you think about it for a second and then give you a minute to pray. So, question. Like, what is it that you're really searching for in life? What are you really searching for? And if you still haven't found it, why is that? Question. How has God been revealing himself to you? Maybe you didn't even notice it at the time, but looking back, are there ways that God has been kind of holding out his hand saying, "Here am I, here am I"? How's God been revealing himself to you? Question, what is it that's going to finally fill this emptiness that you sense inside of you? Well, you can keep your eyes closed if you'd like, and I'm gonna give you a minute to pray. And I realize some of you, I love it about Verve. We get lots of people who don't believe in God come here because it's a safe place, and maybe you don't. And so maybe your prayer could be like, "Hey, God, I don't know if you're real. I don't know if you're up there or not. But if you are real, and if you really love me, would you prove yourself to me?" Or maybe your prayer could be, "God, I used to believe in you, and I think I still do, but man, it's been a long time since I actually felt close to you. God, would you help me to find you again?" Or maybe it's, "God, I do believe, but I still have some seeking to do. And I realize I get distracted and I have not sought you with all my heart. I have not made you my priority. And God, I want to experience all of you and really live in a relationship with you." Or maybe your prayer could be, "God, help me to see the clues. Help me to let them lead me to you." So I'm gonna give you a minute to pray. God, thank you that you love us no matter what. Even if we turned our back on you, even if we've ignored all of your reaching out for a relationship with us, you still love us. and you're still inviting us home, still inviting us into a relationship with you. God, I pray that every single one of us would decide right now, I'm going to make this my priority. God, I am going to seek you with all my heart. I want to join the search party. I pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.